This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Node of existence as opposed to the quantitative node of existence. And particularly last week we discussed the whole Torah approach to material possessions, how one relates to the acquisition of material possession, how much effort one puts into it, what purpose it plays in one's life, and so on. We're going to take that concept, particularly last week's concept, a little bit further tonight, and develop it in a slightly broader fashion. The Midrash on the story of the B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad, the two tribes who were particularly wealthy even before they came into Eretz Yisrael. All the Jews were wealthy, but they were particularly wealthy, and their wealth lay mainly in cattle. Found that the land they had just conquered from the Midianites outside Eretz Yisrael was in fact suitable for their business needs, and made a deal with Moshe that they would stay there, they would set up camps there and cities there for their families and for their cattle. They would then go in front of the army, in the front line, to help their brothers conquer the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And when the whole of Eretz Yisrael was conquered, they would come back and live in this area that they had just conquered now. Says the Midrash the following: "Umekne Rav haya livnei Reuven velivnei Gad halacha." It's questionable why the Midrash starts by saying it is a halacha, because it's not clear on the surface what the halacha really is, but the Midrash continues. In other Girsaot, this Midrash is brought in various places, and in the other places this word halacha does not appear. So it's not really worth spending a lot of time in understanding why the Midrash uses the word here. Shlosha matonis nivru ba'olam, says the Midrash, three gifts were created in the world. Zocho ba'achas mehen, notal chemdas kol ha'olam. All you need is one of them, and you've got the goals and ambitions of the whole world. That's it. Zocha b'chochma, zocha b'kol. The first one is chochma, wisdom. And if you manage to get yourself some wisdom, you've got it all. Zocha b'gevura, zocha b'kol. Power. If you manage to get yourself power, you've also got it all. Zocha b'osher, zocha b'kol. And if you manage to get wealth, you've got everything. The three things that a man needs, or one of the three things, one only needs one of them, to be potent in the world, to be effective in the world, are one of these three things. You need to be wise, or you need to be powerful, or you need to be wealthy. If you are none of those, then you are a shlemil. That's what it is. One needs one of those three things: wisdom, power, or wealth. That's it. Why is it sufficient to have one? Very simply. If you have wisdom, you'll have the sefer to get yourself money and power. If you have power, you'll know how to get yourself money and to buy wisdom. So you'll buy yourself advisors. If you're a foolish person yourself, you'll buy wise people you can manage. And if you're wealthy, you'll get yourself power and you'll buy wise people. So all you need is one of the three, and then you can already operate in a potent fashion in the world. But if one has none of the three, then one is a shlemil. El Masai, says the Midrash, conditional. When does it work? When does this little deal work? Bizman shehen matznois shemayim uvois bekoach haTorah. It is provided these three things, whichever one one's working for, comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. It's a gift of God, and it comes through the effort of Torah. Aval gevurosoi veoshroi shel boso v'adam einu klum. But the power and wealth of normal society, that's nothing at all. It's difficult. So there are two kinds of wealth now and two kinds of powers. One does work and one doesn't work. We understood the Midrash very nicely. One understands that to have the chemdas ha'olam, to have the desires and ambitions of the world fulfilled in oneself, all you need is one of those three things: literally wealth, and literally power, and literally chokhmah. Now the Midrash says no, it's not like that at all. Then the Midrash brings various psukim to show that there is no value in the chokhmah, Gevura and Osher of regular society. The Midrash goes on further and says, "Umatonis elu bizman she'enan boim min HaKadosh Baruch Hu." And these gifts, when they don't come from the Ribono Shel Olam, we also have to understand what does it mean when they don't come from the Ribono Shel Olam. How can you have wisdom that doesn't come from the Ribono Shel Olam? Or wealth that doesn't come from the Ribbono Shel Olam. We know that between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the Ribbono Shel Olam decides on how much money you're going to earn that year. So how can one have wealth that doesn't come from the Ribbono Shel Olam? But there is such a concept. And if one has one of these gifts and it's not from the Ribbono Shel Olam, sofon lihiposek mimenu. In the end, they're going to disappear. Then the Midrash goes on to give examples of two people, one from the Jewish people and one from the non-Jewish people, who had one of each of these. So there's six examples altogether: two who had Chochma, two who had Gvura, two who had Osher, and shows how they were both destroyed, both the Jewish one and the non-Jewish one, destroyed by their very strength, destroyed by their wisdom, destroyed by their power, and destroyed by their wealth, because it wasn't from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And finally, it says the same, in fact, applies to Reuven and Gad. V'chein ata motzei b'vnei Gad v'vnei Reuven. And so you find with the tribes of Gad and Reuven, shehayu ashirim, they were wealthy, v'hayo lahem miknei godo, and they had a lot of cattle. V'chovavu, before we go any further, just at this point, it's difficult in reading the parsha in the Torah about the two tribes, the 2.5 tribes, it's difficult to know whether the Torah is censuring them or accepting it. One doesn't know whether they're being criticized in the Torah for their deal with Moshe, or whether it's being accepted. We see from the Medrash that they're being criticized. They had a lot of cattle. The chavavu es mamoinam, and they loved their money. The yoshvu lahem chutz meretz Yisrael. So much so that they were prepared to stay outside Eretz Yisrael for their money. What happened? The fichach golu techilo. They were the first ones to go into golus. We call ashvotim from all the ishvotim shenema vayegalim leruveni velagadi velechatzi shevet Manashe. Umi garam lahem. And what caused them to be the first to go into exile? Al shehiprishu atzmo minachem b'shvil kinyonim, because they were prepared to separate themselves from their brothers, from their society, for the safekeeping of their money. Minayim, from where do you know that? Mimashe kosev b'Torah, from what it says in the Torah, mikne rav hayal libnei Reuven, etc., etc. The whole parsha of this week's sedra. This medrash one could speak on for many, many hours to clarify it fully. So we're not going to be able to do that, but we're going to clarify parts of it. The first thing we see is that there are two types of Chochma, two types of Osher, and two types of Gevurah. Two types of wisdom, two types of power, and two types of wealth. One of them gives you everything, and one of them gives you nothing. Wealth, the one type, is money. Power, the one type, is influence. Chochma is knowledge. That's quite simple. What's the other type of each of them? So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos defines the other type. In the beginning of the fourth Perek, Ben Zoma Omer, Ben Zoma says, Ezehu Chacha? What is a Chacha? The Mishnah is now about to define what we mean in Torah when we talk about a wise person. Halomed Mikol Odom. A man who learns from everybody. Now, in the world, you would normally think that's an idiot. If he can learn from everybody, he must be pretty stupid, because there's some pretty stupid people around in the world who are included among his teachers. But no, that's called a chacham. Shenemar, as it says, Mikol melamdai hiskalti, I have achieved wisdom, I've gained from all my teachers. Ezehu kibor, what is a powerful man? Hakovishis yitzro, says the Mishnah, a person who's able to control himself. That's a powerful man. Shenema, as it says, Tov erech apayim, a man who has patience is better migibo, better than a warrior. Moshel berucho, and a person who can direct his own spirit, is better miloiched ir, than someone who can smite a city, can conquer a city. So the Mishnah tells us that it is more difficult, in fact, to handle oneself than to conquer a city. So when one talks about raising one's stature and developing stature and so on and so forth, don't be discouraged if you don't feel much progress. It takes a long time and it's very hard. It's harder than conquering a city. That one has to know, working on oneself and raising one's levels and gaining mastery over oneself is harder than conquering a city. It needs more seichel and it needs more power. Ezehu Oshir, who is a rich person, Asomeach Bechelko, person who enjoys what he's got. Shenema, as it says, Yegia Kapecha Kitochel, if you're able to enjoy the fruits of your own labors, Ashrecha v'tovlach, then you'll be happy and it'll be good for you. Ashrecha v'olam hazeh, you'll be happy in this world, v'tovlach l'olam haba, and you'll be well off in the world to come. So then we have definitions of what the Torah regards Chochmah, what the Torah regards Gevura, and what the Torah regards Osher. What's the difference between this and the normal understanding of these three concepts? Very simple. One is acquisitive and one is experiential. The world, as we've discussed, measures in terms of quantity, how much. So we measure wealth in terms of how much money, we measure power in terms of how much influence, and we measure knowledge in terms of how many facts. Torah isn't that way at all. Torah measures. Chacham is a state of being. It's an experience to be a Chacham. It's not that you're a Chacham and now you can retire because you've made it to Chachma. No, Chacham is a state of being. You can be a Chacham today and a non-Chacham tomorrow. You can be a Chacham one moment and not a Chacham the next moment. Because what is a Chacham? A Chacham is a person who learns from everybody. What does it mean to learn from everybody? You know, there's only one Midah which is, not only, but the one Midah which is most counterproductive to Chachma is what, there's only one word for that Midah, and it's a Yiddish word. I don't know what the translation of it is, but I know what it means. Being verknyucht. Right? If there's anybody who doesn't know what being verknyucht means, maybe by the end of the shiur we'll know. But that's the only Midah that I can think of which can't tolerate Chachma at all. Verknyucht means closed up, narrow, not prepared to look openly, not prepared to respond, not prepared to analyze for what it's worth, to see for what it's worth. Preconceived ideas. This is how it is, and that's how I see the world, and that's it. Finished and closed. That's the one thing that doesn't allow Chochmah to develop. There's no way that in a person who's in Faknyukt, Chochmah can develop. And when I talk about Faknyukt, I don't only talk about in Frum circles. We've got Faknyukt in all circles. The Afrikaners called it Verkrampte. And the Englishmen haven't yet found a name for it because they don't know that it exists, but it exists very well. But that's what it is. Being verknyucht, being closed, being unresponsive to what's happening around about one. That's the thing that prevents limud, that's the thing that prevents learning. What's a chacham? Halei made nikol adam. Everything you see, you're able to learn something. You have to be awake, you have to be alert, you have to be watching, open, prepared to learn something from everybody. Prepared to somebody that you don't agree with, somebody that you don't like. It makes no difference. The requirement is, it's not a quantitative measure. He learns from everybody, so he must be so wise. It's a qualitative measure, not a quantitative measure. It's he is capable of learning from everybody. He is capable of looking at everybody so openly and being so responsive to everybody and to every situation that he gets something back. He gets feedback and he's able to feel it and to respond to it and relate to it. That's being a chacham. It's existential. It's not quantitative. It's not how much you know that it describes whether you're a chacham. It's your ability to be open to the world around you. If you're open to the world around you, you'll be a chochem. It will take you a little bit longer, a little bit shorter, it doesn't matter. But you're on the way to chochmah. And if you're closed to the world around you, if you don't see, all you see is what you've been taught and what you've heard, and that's all you're prepared to listen to, then you must know there's no chance for developing chochmah at all. And a gibur? A gibur is not how much influence you've got, because how much influence you've got depends on other people. It doesn't depend on you. It depends on how much influence they're prepared to give you. A gibur is having influence over yourself. We're going to clarify that one a little bit later. And an oshir, I've always said to you, my maid thinks that I'm a millionaire. I think, why does she think I'm a millionaire? Because I don't have to think. If I want to buy a bag of Millipap, I don't have to go to my bank manager and check up whether I can afford it. So she thinks I must be a millionaire. I think that Harry Oppenheimer is a millionaire. Well, you know, if he wants to buy a motor car, he wants to buy a little airplane for himself, he doesn't have to go to the bank and find out whether he can afford it. He buys it. Harry Oppenheimer used to think that Onassis was a millionaire. If he wants to buy an island and he wants to buy a couple of companies or a country, he doesn't have to go to his bank enough. So who is a millionaire? Is Onassis the millionaire? Am I the millionaire? Is my maid the millionaire because they're poorer people than her? Asameach b'chelka. It's not how much you've got. That's not important. Ashirus, wealth, is the ability to enjoy what you've got. If you've got one table and a chair and a loaf of bread and you can enjoy it, you have more than if you own ships and empires and you can't enjoy them. Ashirus is how much you're able to enjoy your wealth, not how much wealth you've got. How much wealth you've got is irrelevant. So now we understand the Midrash a little bit better. Says the Midrash, sure, these three things are what makes one potent and powerful in the world. In order not to be a shlemil, you've got to have chokhmah, gevura, or Osher. But not the normal Osher, and not the normal Gevura, the Torah's concept of Osher, Gevura, and Chochmah. Okay. Now I understand that if the Osher is the wealth, is not the Torah's concept of wealth, but society's concept of wealth, I understand how you can lose it. That means that the Midrash tells us that if one only has quantitative wealth, it's going to be nifsat mimeno, it's going to stop from you, it's not going to carry on forever. I can understand that you have money one day, you don't have the next day. No problem. I can understand. Gevura, also. You have influence one day, you don't have influence the next day. The government changes, your friends are no longer in power. Easy to understand how a man can have influence one day and not influence the other way, the other day, if it's not the Torah's concept. If it's the Torah's concept of a Gibor, then you've got it. If it's the Torah's concept of an Ashir, of a rich man, then you've got it. But if it's society's concept, then it's not. But even society's concept of a wise man, a Chochm. What is quantitative Chochm? We've drawn a line down the middle and we've said quantitative, qualitative. And on the, we put Chochmah, Gevurah and Osher right down the side, and we've got quantitative Chochmah and qualitative Chochmah, and quantitative Gevurah and qualitative Gevurah, and quantitative Osher and qualitative Osher. The last two we understand, but what is quantitative Chochmah? What is quantitative wisdom? Well, we've got a definition of wisdom here, Allah made me call them. But whatever definition you'll use for wisdom, how can you lose it? What does it mean? Everybody says wisdom, education, it's the one thing nobody can take away from you. And the world is right. But the Midrash tells us it's not so. You can lose your wisdom. How? The quantitative wisdom is halacha. Knowledge of halacha. Chochmah is a state of being. That's what we just discussed. Still, chochmah is a degree of stature. It's who you are. But knowledge of halacha, I'm not talking about knowledge of dinim, I'm talking knowledge of halacha. Knowledge of halacha is the ability to analyze a situation and to analyze halacha and to apply halacha correctly to the particular situation. That's what the knowledge of halacha means. And the knowledge of halacha is the quantitative expression of chokhmah. But even in the Torah sense, you can't be a rich man in the Torah sense without money. You might not need much, but you need something. Some people need a lot, some people need less, but each person needs something. You can't be a gibor without some influence. You need some influence at least. You can't be a chokhmah without chokhmah, without wisdom. What is wisdom? That's halacha. And halacha can be lost. That's the first principle we're learning tonight. That is, that although chokhmah, it's difficult to understand how that can be lost, although we'll see, although being a chokhmah, it's difficult to understand how that can be lost, although we'll see that too. But chokhmah, the object of being wise, the quantitative aspect of being wise, that can be lost very, very easily. We're going to see that clearly. Just before I carry on with this, let me explain a little bit more carefully the relationship between chokhmah and halacha. We learned a Gemara a couple of weeks ago in Erevin, which really is the basis for this principle. And the Gemara says, this is Erevin Daf Yud Gimel. Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, Sholosh Shonim Nechlechu Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. For 3 years Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued, Halalu Omrim Halacha Kemoseinu, Halalu Omrim Halacha Kemoseinu. They were no longer arguing about their particular views. They'd agreed to differ already. Now the argument was, who is halacha like? How do we paskin? Who do we decide like Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai? Yotzo basku, they couldn't reach a conclusion, and eventually a heavenly voice came out. The Omran said, Eilu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both Beit Hillel's words and Beit Shammai's words are the words of a living God. In other words, they're both true and correct and of great value. The halacha to Beit Hillel, but that we paskin like Beit Hillel. Has the Gemara v'chi me'achar she'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim mipnei ma zocho Beit Hillel lekvua halacha k'moson. Since both of them are right and both of them are divrei Elokim chayim, through what did Beis Hillel merit that halacha was fixed according to them? Answers the Gemara: Mipnei she'noichin va'aluvin, because they are quiet in the sense that they don't get angry, va'aluvin, and you can't insult them. Whatever you say to Beis Hillel, they don't get offended. No foribles. And they used to learn not only their own shittas, but they used to learn Beis Shammai shittas as well. And in fact, they used to put the words of Beis Shammai before their own words. They used to attach a lot of importance to the words of Beis Shammai. And that's why halacha was decided like them. We see a few principles from here. The one is that halacha and emes, that halacha and truth are not necessarily identical. You can have something which is true and which is of great value, and it's divrei Elokim chayim, but it's not halacha. We don't paskin that way. What's the difference? Halacha is in fact the application, as we said, of Torah reasoning to a particular human problem.
Chokhmah, just this learning, playing without halacha, just the chokhmah, that's something that one closes oneself off in the Beis HaMedrash, and one sits and one learns the Torah in the Beis HaMedrash, and one can reach certain conclusions in the Beis HaMedrash, and those conclusions might be emes, those conclusions might be true and of great value, but totally impractical. Halacha has to be practical. Halacha is taking as close as we can to the most undiluted truth that we can get at, and applying that accurately to a human situation outside the Beis HaMedrash, so that the result is emes, so that the result is true and is Torah. And in fact, we're told that Beis Shammai is closer to the absolute truth than Beis Hillel. In terms of absolute objective truth, Beis Shammai is closer than Beis Hillel. But we can't paskin like Beis Shammai. After Mashiach comes, we'll paskin like Beis Shammai. But now, while the world is not up to it, when the world is not as perfect as it is inside the Beis HaMedrash, when the practical world is not as ideal as the ideal world, then you need the psak of Beis Hillel to make the thing work. The psak of Beis Shammai is not acceptable. The second thing we learn is that to decide like who the halacha is, we don't look at the objective facts. We don't analyze the words of both and weigh them up. Not sometimes we do, but not always. What's more important is who is the source. That's it. If Rav Moshe Feinstein comes up and he says, "This is it," I don't write to him and say, "How do you know? Where do you get it from?" It's not important. From an intellectual, academic point of view, yes, it's important to know how he reached that conclusion. But from a psak halacha, it's not important at all. That is the din, because of the stature of the person who's uttered that din. That becomes the halacha. Even if it's not academically as perfect as somebody else's approach might be, because of the stature of the individual, that's what's koveya halacha. One sees that in the Gemara too here. Why do we paskin like Beis Hillel? Because of their midas, because of their characteristics, because of their stature as human beings. That's why we paskin like Beis Hillel. We're not even weighing which is more true and which is more accurate. For psak, you need a certain quality of posek. You need a certain quality of human being, which you don't need for regular learning. A Rosh Yeshiva and a Rov are very often two different personalities. And that the personality of a Rosh Yeshiva is very often suitable to being a Rosh Yeshiva and unsuitable to being a Rov. And the personality of a Rov is often suitable to being a Rov and unsuitable to being a Rosh Yeshiva. Because a Rosh Yeshiva deals with ideals, and a Rov deals with practicalities, as close as possible to the ideal. But in a non-ideal world, there's no way that practicality can equate to ideal, until the Mashiach himself comes. Sometimes one finds those two personalities combined in one person, but still, he has to then use different disciplines. When a Rov is a Rosh Yeshiva also, he uses a different academic discipline when he's learning Rosh Yeshiva style, and when he's learning as a Rov, and he's paskening a Shaila, he uses a different style. We'll see very soon what the critical requirement is for a posek, for somebody who decides halacha. So bear that Gemara in mind, we'll come back to it in a moment. Now we go to a Gemara in Psochim, Daf Sanach Vav. Resh Lakish Omar, Resh Lakish says, Kol Odom Shekoyes, any man who gets angry, Im Chochom Hu, if he's a wise person, his wisdom disappears. Says Resh Lakish. Where do we know from? From this week's Seder. Nimoshe. Dichtiv, where it says, Vayikzot Moshe al Pekudei Hachayil. We have it right in the beginning of this week's Seder, where he sends the soldiers out to smite the Midianites. And then it says, Vayetzu Moshe ve'elozo ha-koyen v'chol nesiyah ha-ido likroso v'mechutz l'machane. And Moshe and Elozo, the Koyen, and all the heads of the tribes go out to meet the returning soldiers to outside the camp. Vayikzot Moshe al pekudei ha-chayil. And Moshe became angry with the commanders of the army. And he said to them, Hachayisim kol nekeva, did you allow the females to live? And then he goes on telling them exactly what has to be done, and that the whole nation had to be wiped out, and how could they have allowed the females to live, bearing in mind that the female Midianites were the ones who caused all the problems in the first place. And later on it says, Vayomer Elozar HaKoyen El Anshe HaTzovo HaBoim LeMilchama. And Elozar the Kohen says to the army coming back from war, Zois Chukas HaTzoro Asher Tzivo HaShemes Moshe. These are the principles of the Torah which God commanded Moshe. And he goes about telling them how to kasher the kelim, how to kasher the utensils that they brought back from the Midianites. And from here we have the bases of the halachas of Yoredeh. So who announces it? Elazar the Kohen says, these are the laws which God commanded Moshe. Asks Resh Lakish in the Gemara. And where was Moshe? Moshe standing there as well. Can you imagine? They're about to hear now what to do with the Kalim. Chidushim, they're going to hear new Torah. How you catch your Kalim, they're going to hear. And there's Moshe, their Rebbe, is standing over there. And Elazar the Kohen. And they wait. And they wait. And they wait. And Moshe says nothing. And Elazar says, this is, we're now going to tell you the halachas which God told Moshe. What happened? Says Reish Lakish, Michlal de Moshe I alimine. You see from here that Moshe forgot. For a moment he didn't know what the halacha was. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know you're a Yoredeya. Something that every little yeshiva bocher, when he wants to go out and be a little rabbi or a reverend or something, he takes smicha and he learns these dinim. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do, how to kasher the kelim. Says Reish Lakish, that's because of the previous parsha, Vayiktsov, he got angry. And he was fully entitled to get angry. And he wasn't getting angry because they had offended him. He wasn't getting angry because there was anything personal against him. He was getting angry because they hadn't carried out the commandments of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was getting angry because they hadn't kept to the Torah. He was angry on behalf of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But he forgot the halacha. Two observations. Firstly, you see that Reish Lakish started off by talking about a man forgetting his chokhmah, and the example he gives is forgetting a halacha, forgetting a law. And when Rashi brings the Gemara, he talks only about halacha, he doesn't talk about chokhmah. So first of all, you see a proof to what I said to you a little bit earlier, that chokhmah, that halacha, is the expression of one's chokhmah. Chokhmah is a state of being. It's how you are, it's a state of living. But what you achieve through chokhmah is knowledge of halacha. The second thing you see is, a Rosh Yeshiva can afford to get angry. If it's not a person, if he doesn't get feribled. To get angry about a principle, he can afford to get angry. In fact, we learned only 2 weeks ago about the Imtamid Chochem, who the Gemara in Shabbos. Imtamid Chochem, who Noikem v'noitek and Nachash. If you found yourself a Tamid Chochem who gets angry and vicious like a snake, Chogreo amasnecho, put him around your waist. Keep to him. Don't let him go. And says Rashi, because you're going to learn an awful lot of Torah from such a man. Yes, for a teacher you can get angry, but a Rav who's paskening a Shaila, no way. You can't, not even on behalf of the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's nothing wrong in Moshe's anger. There's no Aveira here. It's not as if he's done something wrong. He's got angry quite justifiably and quite correctly. And Moshe does it several times in his lifetime. And each time that he does it, the Medrash says, at that point, the Medrash shows that he forgets the halacha. But he's not quite on the level as far as the halachic accuracy is concerned. This is Moshe Rabbeinu, who heard it from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, who's the source of everything we have. Stands in front of the 600,000 Jews who are waiting to hear the keynote, this speech. They've just come back from war and they're waiting to hear the halachas that apply to their spoil. He stands there speechless because a few minutes earlier he got angry. And that's why we paskin like Beis Hillel. Like Noichin. They don't get angry and they don't get aluvin, they don't get insulted and feribled. That's the middle that one has to have in halacha. In learning, in chokhmah, doesn't matter that much. But in halacha, when it comes to applying Torah to the outside world, the middah, the characteristic you need more than anything else, is nachas ruach. Just to be pleasant, balanced, non-excitable, that's what one needs. We'll see why. What is anger? Let's see it in a situation where it's easy to appreciate it. A little baby, and you pinch him, and he gets angry. Why is he getting angry? Because you've attacked him. That's anger, the response to being attacked. More than that, and it's not as if you've attacked something which he's not terribly worried about, you've attacked him himself. He feels personally attacked. That's why he responds, that's why he cries. What's a cry? A cry is, it's quite useless. If it weren't for the fact that his mother was going to come to his rescue, the cry is not going to help him. An emotional response. Right? And we'll see a little bit later that includes any emotional response. One has to feel emotions. One has to get excited, but not respond out of emotion. One doesn't act out of excitement and emotion. Right? That's the difference. One has to feel angry sometimes. You get upset and you get angry. There's nothing wrong with that. But you don't act out of anger. When a baby feels hurt by the fact that you pinch his toe, that's understandable. But when he cries, that's babyish, that's ridiculous, because it doesn't help. and he doesn't, he can't fight back, he feels overwhelmed. What other things make adults angry? The same thing, when he feels personally threatened. Right? When you've criticized him in a weak point, where you've taken away something from him which he feels he has a right to, then he gets angry. Now, California, the people are lovely. They're terribly polite, and they love one another. You know, that's where the hippie movement started, and that's where everybody loves everybody, and everybody's polite to everybody, and it's a lovely atmosphere. Until there's a 4% cut in the oil supply, and they line up outside a garage, and they start shooting each other. That same California, the place of the most outstanding gentleness and human relationships in the world, is the place of the greatest violence when there's a little bit of a petrol shortage. You've taken the baby's rattle away. That's all it is. He feels personally attacked. He can't carry on living the way he was, and it's his fault. The fellow in front of him in the queue, or the man who happens to be sitting in the White House, it's somebody who's attacking him personally, and he gets angry. And they shoot each other, and they swear at each other, and they punch each other, and they flatten each other's tires, and they break each other's windows. They behave like kids. They get angry. That's emotional. Okay, you can feel upset, you can feel angry, you've got a meeting to go to, and you've got to sit for 2 hours waiting for petrol. Feel angry. But to act out of anger, that's a mishigas. That's ridiculous. It's not going to help you to break the other fellow's wheels. It goes a little bit further. The Gemara says in Psochim Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, Shloisha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oyhavam. There are three people that the Ribbono Shel Olam loves. One, Misha Eino Koez, a person that doesn't get angry. Two, Misha Eino Mishtake, a person that doesn't get shikha, doesn't get drunk. And three, Misha Eino Ma'amid Al Midosov, a person who isn't particular, doesn't get feribled. That's the third one. A person who doesn't get angry, a person who doesn't get drunk, and a person who doesn't get feribled. A person who gets drunk becomes a hefter. He becomes an object. Right? He's no longer a subject. He's no longer somebody who has control over his actions. He's completely at the mercy of his environment. A person who gets feribled, the same. And you can hurt him so easily. And you know exactly what to do, and his behavior becomes so predictable. You know exactly what his weak point is. You know exactly what. Just don't give him an aliyah the Shabbos. And you know exactly what he's doing. He won't come to shul next week. So is he a gavra? He's a chetzah because you're controlling him. He's totally at your mercy and your control. And a person who gets angry, the same. You know exactly how to make him angry and what to do to make him angry. You know, you just have to turn something on. You just have to say to him that you know he's not terribly bright or something, and you know he's going to get furious and angry and. And you got him where you want him. So these three people, says the Maharal, are people who are not, it's not that they're close to Gashmias, that they're close to materialism, or to being a chepter, to being an object. When one talks about material, you're talking about the object. When you're talking about ruchnis, when you're talking about spiritual concepts, you're talking about man in his capacity as being close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Says the Maharal, it's not that they're close to Gashmis. They are Gashmis. They become blobs of objects. That's what they are. When a man is drunk, he's a disgusting object that can be manipulated by anybody around him. A man gets angry, he's an equally disgusting object. Because you know how to touch him off, you know how to set him off, and he has no control over himself. Because if he gets himself into a powerful situation, you just have to know how to play him. And you're sitting in the board meeting, and you know that you've got to get rid of that guy before anything goes further, and you know just when to say the right thing to make him angry, and the moment he gets angry, everybody ignores him. And he's reacted emotionally, and he doesn't know what's going on, and they ignore him. And you've been mevatel him completely, you've nullified his effect completely. So you've got total control over him. And the person who gets faribul, that's the easiest. You can make his life a misery like that. And says the Maharal, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't love these people because he's just so distant from them. The Ribbono Shel Olam is so far from this kind of thing. So opposite to this kind of thing, there's no way you can relate to such people. The people that he loves are people who don't get angry. People who are able to view a thing rationally, to see the problem and work a way around the problem. They don't get angry, they don't cry, they don't shout and scream and kick. They do something constructive. They sit, they pull themselves together, they work it out, and they do something. A person doesn't get drunk, doesn't allow himself into a situation where he becomes a hefter. And a person who doesn't get feribul because it isn't worth it. We begin to see here the nature of kaas, the nature of getting angry. Person gets angry when he is part of the environment around him, not a controller of their environment. A man who's controlling an environment never gets angry. There's nothing to get angry about. He gets frustrated sometimes, he feels upset sometimes, but getting angry, never. He's always cool and in control. And there might be emotions boiling up inside him, but in his control of the situation, you never see it. That's a man who's a gavra. An angry man is a man who feels himself totally hemmed in by the things around him, feels himself part of the things around him, feels himself being attacked directly. If you attack his money, he feels you've attacked him. If, like you, when you attack a child's toy, you take away the child's toy car, the child screams. You feel personally affronted, personally offended. So you attack a person's money, whether it's by doing a good deal or even being a little bit dishonest and unfair with him, whatever it is, he feels personally attacked and he gets angry. Likewise, in the area of Chochmah, in the area of wisdom, you attack his views. I don't agree with what you said. He gets angry. Why did he get angry? It's me you're attacking. It's not you, it's your views. Let's talk like two adults about your views. No, it's me you're attacking. That's caste. That's the person who gets angry. And we see in the Gemara in Pesachim, the Samach Vav, the Gemara about Moshe on our Sedra, that caste disturbs halacha. Why? Because what did we say was the most important element in halacha? Lo med mikol adam. You've got to be a chacham. To paskan a shayla, you've got to be a chacham. What does it mean to be a chacham? Responsive to everybody. Open to hearing everything, and to listening to everything, and to seeing everything, and to reacting to everything. Responding to everything. That's what you. That is what being a chacham is. And that's how you've got to be in order to be able to paskan a shayla. If you're not, you don't have the feel for paskan a shayla. What happens when you get angry? What's the cause of your getting angry? Exactly the opposite. You've closed up. You've become defensive. When a man is defensive, he's faknyot. When he's faknyot, he's not lomed mikol adam. He's not learning from every person. And if he's not learning from every person, there's no way he can paskan a shayla, because he's not responsive enough. He might know the din, but he's not responsive enough to the human needs. Halacha is not just looking up in a book and saying that's what it says. Halacha is applying it to the needs of the individual, applying it to the needs of the situation and the particular circumstances. And if you're not responsive to those circumstances, you don't understand those circumstances. And if you don't understand those circumstances, you can't paskan the halacha. That's why kaas, anger, prevents one, in fact enables one to lose one's actual wisdom, one's chokhmah. How does it work with material, with material things? Exactly the same. Sorry, do we have them in Keschinuch here? Need the second volume. It isn't allowed to destroy things unnecessarily. I think it's a further on in Dvorim. And the Sefer HaMitzvah and the Sefer HaChinuch on that is very interesting, particularly with respect to what we've just been discussing. The Derech Klal, and in general, Osru Zal, this is in Mitzvah Taf Kuf Kaf Tet, that's 529. He says the Chazal have forbidden us La'asot Kol Davar Shel Hashchata, to do any destructive action. And anybody who destroys something because out of anger, they said that's similar to Avodah Zorah. Shekein darko shel Yetzer, because that's how the Yetzer Hora works. Hayom Eimei Lo Asei Kach, v'im yamin oisa l'macha yom Eloi Avodah Avodah Zorah. And eventually he lands up doing Avodah Zorah. What are we saying here? If a person gets in a rage and he takes his glasses and smashes them, or he takes a plate and breaks it on the floor, the Gemara says that's like Avodah Zorah. That's like idol worship. What is a person doing when he breaks a plate? He gets angry and he takes a plate and he smashes it on the floor. He takes a pen and he breaks it. What's he doing? Ever seen the little baby? Takes his rattle and throws it on the floor, and you pick it up and he throws it on the floor again. What's the baby trying to do? That's a very important stage of development in a child's growth. The baby is trying to separate himself from the rattle. The baby is trying to convince himself that not everything is a chetzer, that not everything is an object, that I in fact can control that rattle. What he's doing as well, by the way, is controlling the mother who runs and picks it up every time. But that's another thing. All he sets out to do is to convince himself that he can control the rattle, that the rattle isn't part of him. It's at that time in the growth that the child for the first time begins to realize that he's not an object, that he's not just the same as all the other things around, but that he can affect control over the things around him. And the very first demonstration or experiment in that is to separate himself from the things around him. That's the first way he exercises control. Take something which he thought was part of him and throws it onto the floor. That's what he does. When a person breaks a plate, he's doing exactly the same. I'm not a chefter. Look what I can do to a plate. I can smash it. That's what he's doing. He's separating himself from the plate, trying to show that he does have control. Saying, what do you have control of? Over the plate? What's the good of that? That means you are a chefter. All you can control is the plate. Other people have got total control of you. When a person gets into a rage because he feels that circumstances have got the better of him and circumstances have pushed him into a corner, that's when he takes something and he breaks it. Gemara says a person who does that is as if he's worshipping an idol. Why? Because if he's got so little control over himself that he can do something so stupid and childish, where's it going to end? That means if he feels like it, that's what he does. He doesn't stop to think that breaking the plate doesn't help anything. His intellect doesn't operate. That's an emotional response. That's ka'as. That's anger.
Kolom asher kol adam chayev ligo b'yetzara v'lichbosh tavos ad sheyag b'nafsho ha'maskelet al nefesh ha'metaveh. We'll come back to this in a moment. Ve'omnam asks the Sefer Achinuch Heviu b'gemara. The Gemara brings, Marisin brings various stories b'ktsas min ha'chachomim with certain chachomim shemarim atzmam k'oisim k'dei k'oasim k'dei liyasa b'nei beisom.
Sometimes the Talmid HaChachomim feign anger. The Rambam says anger is something you're never allowed to feel. If you need to use it to educate people, sometimes you've got to show people that you mean what you're saying. And in order to do that, you've got to be angry. So act like angry, but don't really feel angry. So says the Chinuch, sometimes we see in the Gemara that various Chachomim do actions of anger so as to educate their families, or lezarzam, and to motivate them. U'mashlichim miyodam shumachal or shumdover, and they throw certain foods or things out of their hands, they throw it onto the floor. Says the Chinuch Mikol Makom. Nevertheless, Hashgachosam Hoysel Behem LaOilam Shelo Yashlichu Dovah Sheyeh Nishchaf Bezeh. They were always careful not to throw something that could be spoiled or destroyed by being thrown. And that defines the difference of a man who's angry and a man who's pretending to be angry. A man who's pretending to be angry will destroy the thing he's getting angry about. The man who is angry will destroy the thing he's getting angry about. The man who's pretending to be angry will throw it, but he'll choose something to throw that won't break. And he understands, because that's sensible, that's seichel. That means he has control over what he's doing. Whereas the man who throws something and destroys it has absolutely no control over what he's doing. So now we see anger has another possibility. Not only does anger cause you to lose your chokhmah, but it causes you to lose your money as well. You start acting destructively when you get angry. When you feel personally victimized, you start acting destructively. It's one of the pathetic things when business starts going bad. What people start doing, if you watch and analyze businesses that are having problems, unless the man himself is a great man, unless the owner of the business or the manager of the business is a great man, he starts feeling personally vindictive. They're all out to get him, and he starts acting out of chaos. He starts doing destructive things. It's not that he loses interest. He becomes emotional, and he takes decisions which are stupid, which he would never have done in all his business years of experience, and which no child would do. And he sells things when he shouldn't sell them, and he buys things when he shouldn't buy them. He becomes suicidal. And very often, Chas v'Shalom, goes to the point where he actually becomes suicidal, and the final rattle that the person throws, that an adult throws onto the floor, is his own body. When he feels he can't even control the plate, and he can't even control the pen, at least I'll show them I can control myself. I can kill myself, at least. That's the final act of despair, of anger, of chaos. But one sees that anger can not only cause you to lose your knowledge, it can cause you to lose your money as well. Now what is Gevura? Gevura, we said, is HaKovesh Yisitro, a person who conquers his Yetzer. What particular Yetzer? All in the Mefarshim talk about that Yetzer as being the Yetzer of anger. They get it from the Pasuk which is brought. Tov Erech Apayim, patience is better than a power. Than being powerful, than being a hero. Erech apayim nikra ha-ma'aricha po ve'en rotzoli hinakem miyad, says the Rabbeinu Yonah. Erech apayim, patience is when you let your anger move over before you take steps. Right? Okay, you're angry. Nobody's criticizing you for getting angry. You want to take steps? Nobody's criticizing you for taking steps either. But don't do the two together. Don't act when you're angry. And Erech apayim is a person who knows how to count 10. Just wait till that anger's over and then use your head, not your heart. Achman timshor, he waits a moment. Umokum, and for the place linkum nikmoso ki hakasan, an angry person, umitnake miyad, a person who takes revenge immediately. Mechabel et maasav, he confuses his actions. For the Lord datu was saying, he's doing it without intellect and without knowledge. Ba'alzeo ma shlomo, and that's what Shlomo said when he says, Tov erech apayim migibor. It's better to have patience than to be a powerful person. Hamarich apo, a person with patience, apapish ena moichel mitoch kaso. Even though he doesn't forgive the person who's offended him, he still feels offended, and he's going to get him back. But not while he's angry. Elo shemeniach adove liinakem achazman, but he waits to revenge until tomorrow. We're not talking about the issur of revenge, that's something else. We're just talking about the bad middah of acting out of anger. The issur is not to be angry, the issur is to act out of anger. Says to be a powerful person in war, you just have to be strong. You just have to have the right equipment and a little bit of seichel. That's all you need. But to be able to be a marich up, that's stature. And we're talking about qualitative things here. We're not talking about quantitative things. To be able to have influence in government, to be able to have influence and power, to be able to conquer, That you just have to be, you have to have brawns for, you have to have brawn for, you have to have muscles for, you have to have physical power and strength like an elephant. But to conquer yourself, to control yourself and use your anger correctly and not act out of anger, that's something you have to be even more powerful for to achieve. So we find that the three middas which are mentioned in this Mishnah and in the Midrash with which we started are very closely connected. Chochma is a state of being which results in knowledge of halacha. Osher is a straight state of being which results in wealth. The thing which kills them both, kills your ability to enjoy your wealth, because surely a person who breaks his plates doesn't enjoy his plates. So the thing which kills your ability to enjoy your wealth, kills your osher, kills your wealth itself. And the thing which kills your chokhmah, which kills your ability to be responsive to situations, thus enabling you to paskin ahalocha, the thing that does that is a lack of gevura, a lack of the middle one, an inability to wait a little bit until one's anger is over. How does one cope with it? The opposite of getting angry, and we're saying here angry again, we're defining anger, kas, as being an emotional reaction. To feel emotions, yes. To react emotionally, no. An emotional reaction falls into the category of kas. How does one prevent it? There are two ways. Either kill your emotions, and if you're very dull and very insensitive and you're non-excitable and you don't feel anything, you don't get excited about anything at all, then it's okay, you'll never get angry. But if you don't have emotions, you're not going to be able to enjoy your wealth, because to enjoy something you need emotions. You need to feel, you need to be sensitive to enjoyment, and you need to be able to respond to situations in order to enjoy your wealth. And if you're not emotional, you can't pass in the halacha either. Because the paskin ahalocha, you need to be sensitive to the situation. It's not a black and white situation, it's a delicate situation. If it's black and white, you don't need to paskin ahalocha, you can just look up the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. But if you're paskining ahalocha, that means that a situation warrants an adaption of halocha. For that you need knowledge of halocha, and you need sensitivity to the situation. You need emotion. So the way to do it is not to wipe out one's emotions. There's only one other way. That's despite the development of strong emotions, is to develop powerful intellect. It is the ability that one's intellect is so strong that despite the fact that one feels strongly, and despite the fact that one's getting angry, and despite the fact that one's emotions are immediate and they're rich and they're disturbing, one's intellectual ability is so powerful that one's able to penetrate even at that time and see things objectively, see things the way they really are, not just the way they feel to you. An emotion doesn't tell you the way things really are. All an emotion can tell you is the way you feel about things. That's the mistake the existentialists made, to try and discover reality by feeling. All you can tell by feeling is what you feel about it. You can't tell what it really is. You can't tell what somebody else feels about it. Each person's feelings are different. The only way you can analyze a thing objectively and see what it really is through intellect, through knowledge. And here one realizes a little bit the importance we place in Torah on developing strong intellect. And the talk that one often hears about, you know, don't worry about your intellect and just feel it, man, you know, just get into things and don't worry about analyzing it too carefully. What one can't accept, sure one has to feel it, sure one has to be sensitive, sure it has to be emotional. But constantly combined with that, there has to be the ability to dominate. And dominate who? Dominate yourself. And we are our biggest enemies when it comes to being too involved. And the Maharal says that the opposite of anger is detachment. That's intellectual, to be detached. Now obviously one doesn't want to be detached in a way where one becomes cold and completely unfeeling. But one wants to be detached in a way where at least in one's analysis of the situation you're detached. In your decision as to how you control it, you're detached. To end off, I'll give you the illustration of the very times in which we're living. We're living in a very critical time, very exciting time and a very, very critical time. Because man is being faced at the moment with problems for which there is no precedent to solve them. Up till now, there's always been a precedent. It's always been possible to look back into history or to look somewhere or to get advice and to solve one's problems. Today, we've been faced with problems that are insoluble in terms of past experience and past precedent. We're facing inflation and we're facing recession. And these are two very serious things even when they're on their own. When there's inflation, it's bad. Big inflation. When there's recession, it's bad. But when there's inflation and recession, there's war. That's something that we can't tolerate. The human being in the Western economy certainly just cannot tolerate the two together. And it now seems to be accepted that we're about to, well, we've been for quite a while, but it's accepted that now at least before us lies a period of inflation and recession combined. And that's terribly serious. And the amazing thing was that the President of the United States got up the other day and he said something which showed that he's certainly not as the kind of person one thought he was. In the fact that although he didn't offer any solutions, he pinpointed the problem. And he said basically America doesn't have a problem of recession, and America doesn't have a problem of inflation, and America doesn't have an energy crisis. America has a religious crisis. For a president to get up and say that and to touch on what it really is an incredible step that has been taken, even if it doesn't help in the short term. Because this is something we've often discussed, that we're reaching a stage where the solutions to economic problems don't lie in economy, where the solution to political problems don't lie in politics, and the solution to scientific problems don't lie in science. They all lie in Torah. This is the ikvus of the Mashiach for the time before the Mashiach comes. One always wonders, how is the Mashiach going to solve economic problems? How is the Mashiach going to solve political problems and strategic problems? How is the Mashiach going to solve the energy crisis? It's not an energy crisis. There is no political problem. What Carter said in his speech is, we need Mashiach. That's what he said. There is no other solution. We need a religious revolution. We need a spiritual revolution. There's been an industrial revolution already. That's over. Now we need a spiritual revolution. Let's understand it. Inflation comes for many reasons, and one doesn't want to oversimplify it, but as far as we're concerned in this particular point, inflation comes from having the wrong kind of wealth. If one would have the wealth which is mentioned in the fourth paragraph of Pirkei Avos, there would be no problem with inflation. If one would relate to one's wealth the way we discussed last week, there would be no problem with inflation. The wealth that the Medrash talks about is where wealth is stashed away. The purpose of wealth is to measure your success and to provide for your security. The Torah's concept of wealth is a tool. We have to look upon our money like a workman looks upon his tool, not like a businessman looks upon his bank account. It's the tools, it's the wherewithal to do, to live, to experience things, to achieve. That's what our money is for nothing else. So we spend our money on all sorts of things. On hachnosas ochi, on charity, on building, on constructing yeshivas. No problem of inflation and unemployment. The money's moving. Things are being done with it all the time. We're not stashing it away. We don't believe in stashing money away. That's not its purpose. Its purpose is to achieve, it's to do. And if the non-Jewish world would at least relate to money on the basis of Yishuv HaOlam, which we discussed in the Gemara Shir a few weeks ago, just if they would understand that their means of Avodas Hashem is Yishuv HaOlam, to build the world up, and they would get busy building the world up, and they would have slightly bigger families so that it would be a growth demand, not a decline in growth demand, and they would construct, and they would build, and they would give tzedakah, and they would contribute, and they would feel that they have an obligation to contribute to the world's economy, not just to take from it, there would be no inflation. Inflation comes from taking more than you're giving. Taking more money, earning more money than you're contributing to the economy. It's Geneva, basically. That's the problem. And we have recession, which is being caused at this time by the oil crisis. It's inflation they can still handle. The Arabs have come along, and what they've done to oil, we have an oil crisis. Now, oil is very much like mon, like we learned two weeks ago. The same as the mon couldn't be kept and stocked away, it had to be used. It was the only way you could relate to the mon was using it. Not like our money, which you can also keep. Only way you could relate to it is using. Energy is the same. Oil, coal, uranium. It's useless being stored. It doesn't achieve anything being stored. It's not even a measure of wealth stored. Energy is there to be used. That's what it's there for. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam put it there for. To use it. But there mustn't be corruption in how you use it. It has to be used. Al pi halacha. There are halachas which govern the use of energy, the use of anything. To waste energy is an issur d'oraisa. It's an issur in the Torah, bal tashchis. To leave a light on when it doesn't need to be left on is an issur d'oraisa. To waste energy in any form is an issur d'oraisa. If people would understand this and would relate to it in this way, there wouldn't be an energy crisis. And what would we be doing with our energy? Well, let's look and see what has been done with energy. Why do the Americans cry that there's a little bit less oil? Because they didn't ever sit down and say, there's energy. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam want us to do with the energy? They became chefters to the energy. Petrol is cheap, so that determined their lifestyle. It determined the cars that they bought and the things that they did. The holidays they took, the way they spent their time, the way they did business. Everything was determined by the cheap availability of petrol. Now in Torah that's not allowed. The price of something has nothing to do with the issur of Baal Tashchis. You're not allowed to waste something even if it's worth a penny. and it makes no difference if petrol costs a penny a gallon or it costs 20 rand a gallon. If you need it for your Avodas Hashem, you use it. And if you don't need it for your Avodas Hashem, you don't use it. And if people would have related that way to petrol years ago, there would have been no problem, because a lot less of it would have been used. They would have been controlling the petrol and the energy rather than being controlled by the energy. Now they've established a lifestyle which has been completely determined by cheap petrol, and now the petrol is no longer cheap. They're being bitten, they're being pinched on the toe, they're babies whose rattles are being taken away from them. They're chetzes and they're getting angry, they're going to go to war, they're going to fight. Because a child doesn't take it lying down when you pinch it. And a baby doesn't take it easy when you take its rattle away. And a businessman doesn't like it when you steal his money. And an American doesn't like it when you take his oil. Because that's his part of it. He gets angry, koyes. And he ceases to function api halotha. He doesn't function with rationality and with intellect anymore. He starts becoming irrational. They start shooting each other and swearing each other and destroying each other. One has to see that the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving a message. What is inflation? Inflation is what happens when you don't spend your money. Inflation is what happens when you take, 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 and you don't keep it going. You don't circulate it. The energy problem? Same thing. You're trying to hold on to it, trying to hold on to it. You're not circulating it in terms of productivity. If there was more money around, there could be more research. If there was more research, there would be other energy sources already. When things are moving, it goes. And our whole last few weeks of discussion on Motzei Shabbos has been along these lines. That if you're living, if you're doing, if you're acting, and if it's api halacha, you don't have to worry about tomorrow. That the Ribbono Shel Olam will look after. All you have to do is be acting, be doing. The moment you become stagnant, the moment you stop, and you start feeling important by stashing it all away, by collecting things around you, that's how you make yourself feel alive, because you're not really living. Then the whole thing comes to a standstill. Then the economy comes to a standstill. Interhuman relationships come to a standstill. Torah comes to a standstill. Everything starts degenerating and becoming corrupt. And that's the meaning of the Medrash. That if you've got those three things, if you've got Chochmah, but dynamic Chochmah, that means you're in a state of Chochmah, you've got it all. If you've got Gevurah, that means you're in a state of Gevurah. You act rationally, although you feel emotionally, you've got it all. And if you've got Osher, if you have the ability to use what you've got, whether you're wealthy or you're poor, it makes no difference, but you're able to utilize it. Like a workman uses his tools. What would you think of a workman if you give him a spade and you say, dig a hole, and he stands with the spade, or he steals the spade, he goes and puts it in his bank? I didn't give it to you for that. I gave you to dig the hole, and if you would have dug the hole, you would have earned more money than the spade is worth. That's what you would have said, you stupid workman. You steal my spade. Had you dug the hole, you would have had twice as much as the spade is worth. But he's not prepared to work. He's not prepared to act. He wants to feel security by what he's got. If you will take Osher, if you'll take wealth, and you'll use it for what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to use it, you'll function, you'll be active, you'll do, you'll interrelate, you'll achieve. Then you'll earn much more than you had. The things get moving, and the Ribbono Shel Olam returns to you what you've spent, and the economy is moving, and people are relating to you, and they buy from you, and they sell to you, and they give to you, and they take from you, and things are happening, and it's a pleasure, it's a mechaya. You've got everything if you've got that. But chas v'sholom, if it's not from the Ribbono Shel Olam, that means it's not spiritual. It's quantitative. You've just snatched it. You've been chotef, as the Medrash itself said. You've snatched it. You're collecting money. You're collecting power. You're collecting chokhmah. You're not being sensitive to situations. You're not responding to situations. You're just learning another page, and another page, and another page. Stashing it all away. Trying to make yourself feel important by how many dinim you've learned, and how many halakhas you know, and how many pages of Gemara you know, or how many books you've read. And you're not responsive, and you're not open to the things around you. Then you must know that your chokhmah becomes quantitative and stagnant, and it doesn't stay with you at all. Thank you.